So I thought it'd be funny to find a bug that made it hard to interact with the doc. Just I wanted a client side DOS bug in a Google Doc because I mean it's a hacking podcast. You send me
I sent you a doc.
I should hack the doc. That'd be funny.
All right, hackers, we all know the value of a good misconfiguration, right? That's often how we're popping bugs and bug bounties. Well, unfortunately, ThreatLocker also knows about it, which is why they built DAC, Defense Against Configurations. DAC scans all of the enterprise machines in your network for misconfigurations, ranks them by severity, and then shows them in nice graphics in a portal. It even emails your team weekly with updates so nothing slips through the cracks. And the best part about DAC, in my opinion, is that it actually maps all of these misconfigurations onto security frameworks, and it also shows you how to fix them. That way, when you need ammo with leadership or with IT, you can point to real specific compliance gaps and get actionable steps. Anyway, check out ThreatLocker DAC. It's an awesome way to stay ahead of these issues that we as attackers love. All right, let's go back to the show. All right, dude, Nick, demo, turbo. What are we sticking with?
I think we'll do Nick slash turbo. I kind of cut my name over in the CTPB Discord slowly, so I did demos parentheses turbo, then I switched to turbo parentheses demo.
Nice.
Now it's just turbo.
Hey, there you go. All right, so, cool. You did make the transition eventually.
Yeah. I mean, the nickname, like, it's not like I changed my...
Yeah.
So,
dude,
it's in a better state.
You've been killing me ever since you got over here. So, listeners, for context, like, you know, Nick and I both live in the same city, and not even only in the same city, in the same little subsection of the same city. And it just pisses me the heck off that this guy, I can't say that I'm the best web hacker.
I think you are.
No, I don't think so, man.
I think you're selling yourself short, man.
I don't think so, especially from the client-side perspective.
There's just so much client-side stuff that you know about that I haven't touched. And it's like I just don't have enough time in seat to have exploited that. And it's
because you're a bit younger, right?
Yeah. Probably about four years, because I think I would have started at VCU as you graduated.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, before we get into too much of the history, we do have to, you know, you have to prove your worth to the critical thinking listeners by sharing a bug. Now, I am actually going to share a bug before you do.
Nice. Nice.
Because this little twerp here put in, when I sent him the doc to prep for this episode, he puts a bug inside of the Google Doc that makes it impossible for me to do anything. So first, why don't we start with that, Nick, and see where we go from there.
I don't think I can speak about the details because, I mean, the report is still in a state where, I mean, they've not fixed it. It's not disclosed. I don't know how Google works with that. I don't know how much they
they're
care.
Chill. They're chill.
They're chill.
Yeah. I would say just say the general details.
All right. So there's
cut it if they I'll talk to Sam afterwards and we can cut it if we need to.
I like that.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's functionality within Google Docs that allows you to do certain things. So there's rich context.
Nick. Okay, there we go. Okay,
there's rich context. And so you can like embed things from other Google ecosystems. So I thought it'd be funny to find a bug that made it hard to interact with the doc. Just I wanted a client-side DOS bug in a Google Doc because I mean, it's a hacking podcast. You send me
a doc.
I should hack the doc. That'd be funny. Because I know about bugs. I don't know about preparing for podcasts.
Exactly.
So I'll prepare for the podcast by dropping a bug in here. So I did some dynamic client-side instrumentation to look for inefficient regular expressions. And so I ended up finding, and it sucked because I wanted to use DOMLogger++. But then when I tried to hook the function I wanted to hook, it broke DOMLogger++ because it called it internal. And so I should probably open an issue there.
Yeah, we talked to Kevin about that.
Yeah, well, the right answer is just open an issue, sit down and do it. But the problem is I'd have to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And you're here instead.
Yeah, so. So instead I did something cursed where I just used Chrome DevTools debug. Shout out Jorian for putting... he put me onto that. I know he talked about that on a past episode. That whole page is really good of the Chrome DevTools docs. It has some other interesting functions like monitor. But so what I did is I set a debug on regxp.dev prototype.exec, refreshed the page so it hit the first one, just replaced that function with like a proxy wrapper call.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I had it create a set of each unique regular expression that it saw get called that way. And so this was like really naive testing. I didn't hit like regexp.test. I didn't hit string.prototype.match. I just picked one function.
Yeah.
And, then I manually ran these sketchy looking ones, through. So, man, what's the tool? There's an open source tool for, command line regular expression, solver for inefficient inputs.
Oh, really?
I forget what it's.
I've never heard of that.
I guess I'll throw it a link somewhere. Maybe I linked it in here. I can't. I linked it in my report to Google. Because I walked through, because I wanted to do the thing where it's a really good report or the one point. So I walked through, here's what I would do if I wanted to find more of these bugs, and wrote exactly what I, but anyway, ultimately found an inefficient regular expression, found a source that reached it. The best part was the POC I built. So working with this, the way I was making the calls was kind of rough because, man, the way that the, so Kix is the name of the Google Docs document viewer. The JavaScript is such a nightmare, man. And so I was modifying save updates via hooking the client side code with a conditional breakpoint. And so I'm like, well, that's going to be really annoying to walk triage
ever.
Through dealing with. And so I'm like, wait a minute. When you copy rich content, it actually saves a bunch of stuff to your clipboard. And so what I ended up doing was figuring all that out and then just building a web page. What did I call it? There's some description in this doc, vibe coded swaggy POC or something. So anyway, got it down to the point where you just like navigate to my site, click the button on the page. It copies the malicious crash turbo badge to your clipboard and then you can just paste it in a doc. So that was good. The problem was if you did that, it would crash. They would hang as you're pasting it because they would. So I had to have them in the steps to reproduce defang the doc where they'd set a conditional breakpoint on that expression, just replacing it with something.
So it wouldn't be able to actually server-side store.
Because the client would hang before it could send. So you had to instrument it, which was good though, because I knew I could clean them out and I didn't have to do any additional work because I already had the setup and steps needed to do
that. Well, that's good. Yeah, man, that was hilarious. When I opened up the doc and I was like, oh my gosh, what is this? And it just crashed. That was pretty crazy. So I guess, you know, moving forward to future critical thinking guests, like
y'all got to up your game.
The
and
standard
bring, like,
has been set.
Yeah, that was a really lame bug. You've got to put like it's got to escalate to the point somebody's just doing like full ATO payloads.
Dude, if I ever freaking open up the doc and I just see an alert box on docs,
dude, that'd be crazy. Yeah, actually,
yeah,
it'd be interesting if. I'm not, all right. I've got a thought I'm not going to get into that would be an interesting way to have a modal appear on the page.
Yeah.
And would be a lot less tricky in theory.
Yeah. Well, okay. Hold on. So let's, the problem is these pages all have coop, you know?
And this would be like a very low impact scenario.
Yeah.
But. I'm not going to talk about it because I have to think
through it. This is a good exercise. Yes. Let's go through this, but okay. No, Justin, I have to introduce the guest. I hear my dad's voice ringing in my ear. Introduce the freaking guest, Justin. Guys, this is Nick, aka Turbo. He also lives in Richmond, which is great. He's been a super active member of the critical thinking community. And as you can hear, he's kind of crazy with client-side stuff. and so it's been a long time coming, man. You've been really active in the community. And you know, one of the first times you really, really came on the radar was when, you know, we're doing these hackalongs, and just every single time we do the hackalongs, he's there and then just hands me something. Like, he's like, oh, here's a bug right away. And I'm like, dude, how are you finding this in like 4 seconds? You know, and obviously with the hackalongs, it's like, you know, I'm having to do so many things besides actually hack that I'm much slower. But even then, I feel like the way you're ingesting these applications is really fast.
It might appear that way to somebody busy trying to run the hackalong. Like half of the time I'm off just doing my own side quests and not paying attention. And then I'll loop back in and be like, all right, yep, let's look at some JavaScript or something. But
Well, I've been really impressed. And I would say, as a, you know, self-professed client-side hacker, that Nick is like one of the go-to guys. And I'm pretty salty that I'm not the best client-side hacker in Richmond right now.
Not sure how real is, that is, but it means a lot.
Which is crazy. So yeah, I guess from there, we got a lot of places we could go. But I actually do kind of like that thought exercise of, like, let's say we wanted to be, you know, we wanted to pull a prank on Justin on the next Critical Thinking episode. You're queued up as a guest. You know, obviously the best way to get a modal to pop.
Well, what qualifies as a modal?
Yeah, I think any...
What qualifies as a modal?
True. It's true.
And that's something that I don't even think that the browser vendors have agreement on.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's cool for me to talk of.
To talk about it, man. We could cut it out. This is the pod. Like, oh my god.
Okay,
gosh,
well, okay. Dude. So if you make... there's an interesting observation that... Well, what is a modal in your opinion in a browser?
Yeah, so I mean, there's variants to that, right? You've got alert, you've got prompt, you know, you've got things like print. It's nuanced for sure, but like, to be honest, if the way that I would approach this whole Google Docs situation is see if I could hijack an iframe on the Google page, right? Like, say they've got some sub resource that's got an iframe.
I'm thinking something very similar.
And I'm thinking like maybe there's some third party that's in there that's doing analytics. I don't know. It's Google, so probably not. It's probably just Google, but that's doing analytics. You pop an XSS on that domain. Now it's in a named frame. And then you can do window.open into the other frame.
That'd be really nice.
But I think Coop is going to block you because your window reference is going to get severed.
I wonder how many places you can frame docs.
Oh, you can frame docs everywhere.
Really? Like, well, because if you can frame it somewhere without Coop, then because it only cares about Coop at the top level. You did a whole podcast about this.
Yeah, there is. Who did that podcast?
Yeah. And so if you can find that's a useful gadget for, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I'd even accept if a guest wanted to, you know, iframe the doc into a page and then pop, you know, a modal from within.
So what I'm thinking of is if you just frame a resource and put it behind basic auth, like www authenticate, like that'll is that a modal? Is a basic auth prompt a modal?
Oh, interesting. If you do like a 401 injection?
Is that like a modal?
Is that a modal?
And if it's I don't know. You know? I would say no. In the eyes of browser vendors, no. Because otherwise if you set allow modal sandbox, then that should prevent it, but it doesn't.
It doesn't?
I don't know if I'm supposed to say that.
Well, that's interesting.
I don't know. I don't know if that's got to be known behavior by them. I think it is. Ooh. I don't know.
It is known behavior.
Okay. Because in that case, it's not a modal.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Unless, you know, maybe some other browser vendor decides that. I don't know.
What other pop-ups are there? There's also like.
Print?
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know. The Google login thing. I don't really know.
That's what I was just about to say. Like, if you can trigger.
I just know that that's used for pop-unders, but I don't know what it. Like, I've never. I don't even know.
You don't have any control of that, though.
Okay. And I don't even know how to invoke that. Is it like Chrome dot something?
It's a Chrome API. It's like a web API specifically.
Okay. Yeah. I've never had to use that.
Yeah.
Seems interesting.
It is pretty cool stuff. Okay. Well, that was a little fun little thought exercise. Sorry for anybody who doesn't love client-side stuff, because we're just going to geek out this whole podcast. You can just skip this one if you want. but yeah. Okay. So you also brought another bug, though.
Yes.
Not the one you left in my doc, a different one.
Yes. Yeah.
Here, let me see. Let's
scroll, because I actually wrote details about it this morning, which was crazy.
A ton of details about it. Let me go ahead and scroll up to it. Okay. So.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Pictures and sensor. This is pretty sick.
What? How does it have so many more red text than when I read it?
Because I've got Grammarly on.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So hit us. What is this bug?
So, yeah. So, I have to be vague about it. Mm-hmm. Basically, I was hacking on a target that allows rendering user provided content in a scenario that is pretty cool and, pretty high impact for XSS in that context, because it's UI passive and wormable. Unfortunately, they don't really care. Like, they don't pay those out fairly. They pay them out as like a low high or something.
Oh, really?
Not like, it's what more do you want in this app?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I decided that whenever I find those, and it was a React create element sync based, bug. All of these were, which are awesome.
Yeah.
So I had done one in this where, man, it was crazy, but to establish some context for how I got to the bug I want to talk about. So I decided I wanted to escalate XSSs on that to impact in the desktop app. So the desktop app's an Electron app. So yeah, so I'd done a lot of auditing of the backend Electron functionality of this. Quite a lot of interesting stuff supported. A lot of ways that new web browsers or new browser windows got created dynamically. You could almost control the web preferences, which if you could, you could set node integration true and then open one to attacker.com. And just, I mean, that's free.
Yeah. So, okay. So I'm not quite understanding. This is an Electron app?
Yes, this is an Electron app to escalate in XSS. And so couldn't get RCE that way because the goal is RCE. So for a past bug, they were using old Electron. And so I was able to take Misty Mountain Cop's V8 POCs for read, write, address of, and just like slog through getting that into working stager shellcode execution to grab a shell script. And that was a crazy 2 weeks.
Sick.
It was like me using, like, I know how to use GDB and I know what's going on with, it was like me doing native hacking on a browser application as if it's just a native app. And it was like, but I got it. I got things working and I've written that up on my blog. I've done a talk on that. And
nice.
So that's not what I want to talk about, but I'd already been there with that. And so I'd found another create element based XSS and I wanted to push it as far as I could with the client.
Yeah.
So, I was able to find functionality that let me persist the XSS. So there's a way to open like a background window, over the Electron IPC channel and you could point that at anything. And so in my case, I think only on Origin stuff got the Electron IPC handler exposed to it. If only I had XSS on Origin.
Yeah.
And so I would just open a background window to a new instance that would spam Electron IPC updates to set the latest page visited. So whenever the app would reopen, it would read that and go back to the latest page you were on. And so I could just have it auto navigate to an XSS payload that would pop, reopen a new background. And so I could persist the XSS within the client.
Okay.
But I wanted to take it further. And so the Electron IPC channel actually supported quite a few sensitive things. So it could list processes. It could take screenshots
on
the client.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. It could take screenshots of windows and then it could take screenshots of what do you call it on Windows? Not processes, but processes that have a window tied to them. And so.
Okay. I don't know what those are called either, but
yeah. So you could get screen level screenshots and then you could get, even if they don't have the,
this is the same sort of thing with Chrome where it's like, okay, application share window, share tab.
Sure. Wonder why they had that functionality implemented.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I tried to get keylogging working as well, but I didn't because there was some other stuff, but I think it was too locked down to do that.
Okay.
And so the final POC, I built like a whole site that, it would call back to like for command and control. And so it would not have scaled at all. Cause I was like doing everything in real time with WebSockets, sending base 64 screenshot image data over a WebSocket. Because I'm like, I don't know, just build a POC.
Yeah.
So I have some screenshots in the doc of it that are censored and are really cool.
Yeah.
And then I also implemented a functionality to be able to, just have like a JS console and you can just run JS on the client authenticated as the victim.
Sort of
so
like, what is that old framework called?
Beef.
Yeah.
I don't know what Beef is up to.
Dude, but, like that was crazy. Like I think I say that old framework, like I feel like that was old when I was in college.
Right. You know? I've never used Beef. I don't know what it's about other than I've seen what you're talking about.
I love the concept. Though,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And it was really cool. And, they did not pay it out as a crit.
No, dude.
I'm,
well, hold on. How did you get? So I guess maybe we can get to that as well. But how did you get the XSS in there in the first place?
So essentially they didn't do much sanitization of JSON used to render certain client-side components.
Okay. So there's something coming back from the API.
So you can store stuff with JSON and you can basically, I'm going to say whatever you want, but not quite. I think they'd added a few mitigations by then. Just because I'd reported enough of these.
So it's a JSON to DOM.
Yes. And so what they do is they render these components, client side that, to be honest, I don't think those guys were expecting they would ever get rendered from arbitrary JSON.
Mm-hmm.
So they had certain values, like a wrapper component and wrapper component props, that, it's expecting like maybe some React, component class as that maybe there's two of them that it uses. But when it's just using the deserialized JSON, you can just throw a string in there as the type. So you can throw like an iframe in there. And then in the props, you can like source JavaScript colon and boom, you've got an iframe. And so if you want to, that talk's not real. At the DEF CON Bug Bounty Village this year, I gave a workshop focused on that vector of XSS via React Create Element because it's a powerful sync.
I would really like. So I know that you had that at DEF CON this year, and I had to leave before then. I had to go back, and I missed that. So I think we need to do a re-check
yes,
of this.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And you know, you said I think there was some recording problem.
Yeah, it like started a little late because they had stuff going on. We were having a good time, and so they just didn't record it. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So tell you what.
Torn up about it.
We'll do. Yes. I mean, if you're down, if you're down to do it again. We'll do maybe a CTBB version.
Yep,
of Critical Thinkers or something like that.
Yep.
Because I would really like to see the talk, and I'm hoping today you can give us a little bit of a summary of that whole talk, or let's call it a teaser, because we don't want to go into like too much of the nitty gritty, because I know that talk is really technically depthful and. This is definitely not, podcast medium is not the best for super in-depth client-side stuff, but give me your teaser on that.
Yeah. So essentially the premise is, you'll have, there's React everywhere, any Next.js app everywhere. You'll have dynamic rendering of components, with React. And so at the end of the day, when you're writing JSX, and this isn't necessarily as true as it used to be, that JSX gets compiled down into things that ultimately turn into React Create Element calls. Now I have to put an asterisk there.
Okay.
Well, it's in newer versions, they actually do, I think, like pretty fragment heavy stuff where it creates a bunch of React fragment wrappers and that reaches a create element or something.
Okay.
But on React 18 or 16, I don't remember. It's direct create element calls if you're just like creating a div or creating a component. It's more optimized now. I don't know the details. It's really complicated. And the reality is, you have this create element sync in React, not document.create element. Don't confuse it with that. I'm not talking about that, but React has a create element function, that essentially, I have a cheat sheet in here that's in the slides. But it takes three arguments. The first one is the type. And so that can be a React component class, that can be a React component function, that can be, it can be some other things that we're not going to worry about. Or it can just be a string. And if it's a string, it'll just use that as like the tag name. It takes props, which you can think of similar, so that's what the props for the created component will be.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a string tag, those will just be attributes. And certain ones have special values and are handled specially. So for example, dangerously set in or HTML, that's one that people think about the most there.
Yeah.
So actually, if you have props control and it's a childless component being created, you can just drop a dangerously set in or HTML __HTML in there. And so one of the lab challenges has a CSPT that reaches a create element sync in such a way where you look at it and it's not immediately clear that you can abuse that. It's really cool.
Is this most commonly exploited in scenarios where you've got some sort of abstraction on top of DOM elements that are being created, like your JSON scenario?
Yes. Like, a lot of the times.
Like a dashboard or something like that.
That's a good, yep. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Ultimately, when you're thinking about what source do I have that's reaching this, my talk only really says, hypothetically, let's say you have JSON data reaching this. Now, it could be more interesting than that. Like, it could be maybe you have some, this is cursed. You have some post message listener that takes some data and you could use like structured, like instead of being JSON, it takes just like an object and then it's structured clone algorithm. That'd be weird. I don't know. That'd be interesting to think about, but that'd also be kind of cursed, but also maybe not. I could see how that could be.
I love this guy.
Yeah, that could happen in the wild. I don't know.
Dude, I'll take this opportunity to just say that, speaking of things that are cursed, this document that was prepped for this episode is the, like, takes the award for the most cursed document I have ever seen on critical thinking. Okay, let me just read to you guys a little bit here. Not like, not to shame.
No, no,
you,
go,
you
know, go like, for it, and then I'll explain. This was the stuff that made it through.
Like, dude, yeah, and then in you here, you're like, oh, this is the stuff that was triple distilled.
Yes, yes. So imagine what didn't even reach the doc. Like, that's the level I'm operating on. Like, it's insane.
Okay, guys, for the listeners, I'm just going to read you some of these, okay? Here it is. He titled the section, Intrusive Thoughts Worth Sharing. And he says, number one, hacking methodology. Hacking methodology, letting the intrusive thoughts win. And then he puts, oops, I nuked the doc. And he says, fuzzing is really a form of agriculture, if you think about it, bug agriculture. Imagine, all right, check this out, dude. Imagine if you're a React use state setter. Dude, I just like, it's like, what is, this is how you're.
Okay,
brain
so
works.
I'll explain the context. So
imagine you're a React use state setter.
I was playing with an application that used a 3.x version of JS YAML. Which if you use yaml.load there, it's like stupid dangerous. Now on 4x, it's not, but on 3x, you have to use safe load. Otherwise, it'll do things like deserialize things as JavaScript functions.
Yeah.
And so I just like threw a YAML file or just swaggy vibe code POC YAML file with a function that, so when it got parsed instead of returning an object, it returned a function.
Okay.
The front end executed that function. I'm like, why? Like, this doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. You're not going to just parse YAML and then execute it as a function. So the reason that happened is because it parsed the YAML and then passed it to a use state setter in a React app. And so you'd think, okay, what's that going to do? That'll like store that state value for that React component as the value of the function, right? No. So use state setters expect, and you can read the docs and get the exact language, but they expect like a pure function. If you'd give it a function, it expects, oh, okay, instead of giving me some object, some like primitive to store as the state for this component value, it's a function that I'm supposed to call to get the state. And so that's how those thought, because I'm like, what is going on
so
here?
So sometimes it passes the value, but sometimes it also passes
if
a
you,
function.
If you pass a use state setter a function, it'll be like, dude, I'm going to run that. And I'm like, dude. Why? But it makes sense. It makes sense. And so that's how that one came to be.
Dude, that's crazy, man. Let me finish reading a couple of these. Another quote from the doc, the concept of small talk, but with an application. Hacking is about watering those little mustard seeds of faith. Call it effing the application on the first day.
Yeah, there's some interesting concepts there. Oh my God, small talk, dude. With the application, yeah. That's a lot of like when you're like, I don't even know what's going on with this app right now. Like I've tried a bunch of stuff on. I'm just going to like poke at these requests lightly when I have like a couple hours, like not really expecting much to come off it.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you're like, oh crap. Yeah. I just found like full read SSRF.
Yeah. So you're doing that small talk and then you get,
it's like,
oh wait,
yeah.
Also?
Yeah. And it's like, yeah. And you're like, whoa. So yeah, that's how that comes up. And then yeah, the other one. So the final one was around the concept of like, cause I was like looking at an app and I popped an exercise way too fast. And I don't even know how it worked. And I'm like, all right, what do I want to do with this app? And it's like, I realized I'm kind of working backwards here. It's like, wow, I already like went there with it. Yeah. And now I need to get to know it and figure out how am I going to show impact.
It's like effing on the first date. Dude, that's hilarious.
That's how my mind works.
That's hilarious though, because that's interesting. Like it is a little bit more of a, okay, XSS, now you've got full control over the situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And whereas a lot of times, you know, what we're doing is we're working backwards from the place where we're like, okay, so there's a token here.
Yeah.
And this is the token that I want. How can I get the token? You know, can I get it via post message lead? Can I like, you know, get it from a referrer? You know, do I need to full XSS to pull this out of local storage or whatever, right? Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
All right, Nick, you're not totally crazy.
Yeah.
You're not
I promise.
You're not totally crazy. Okay, so coming back to the React create element piece.
Yeah.
This is mostly a sync that we are looking for when we have some sort of serialized representation of the DOM that we need to reconstruct.
Yeah, right? Or something that influences it. I mean, it gets dangerous when you start spreading objects from JSON responses, especially if there's like not, if it's very loose what can be there.
Do we need to control attributes? Like if I'm looking at a JSON blob and I see something, you know, like, yeah, I see an image URL and the key is source.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I see like another one that's like alt.
Yeah, yeah, that would get you excited. You'd be like, okay, are they spreading this onto an image tag?
Yeah.
And if they are.
Are they just mapping it?
Right. You know? And then, yeah. That can be interesting. Honestly, like what I've been doing lately on React apps is when I have a CSPT and I think I probably have a way to get some JSON in there, but I don't really know for sure. And it's not a great way to test, but what I'll do is I'll actually dynamically instrument the DOM, hook that fetch function and tag every object nested recursively on the expected JSON response.
Okay, hold on. Yeah. That's we're going to double click into that real quick. Okay, so you've got a CSPT. The response of the CSPT is coming back JSON.
Yep.
Let's say you have some way to control the JSON, whether it's like a upload media gadget or an open redirect.
Or I don't, and I'm like, I'll just find one.
And,
if
or
I need
you don't,
one.
And you're
yeah, because I want to figure out if it's worth finding
well,
one.
Well, I think that's a really great point. Yeah. Is like, you know, do we go down and find the JSON upload, you know, gadget or the open redirect? Or are is if we are trying to trigger this via CSPT, are we just screwed?
Is there even anything to get? Like, is the CSPT even exploitable? Is kind of the question.
Yeah.
And so I would dig into that. Usually before looking for those, I would say like harder to find because like figuring out what's going on with the DOM, that's all white box. You can just sit down and figure it out, right?
Exactly.
You'd hope.
It might
take some time.
So JSON comes back and then you're doing what?
So I do a sloppy check where I have a function that I call it the tagger.
Okay.
So it tags that object. So any object on that response object, it adds like an XSS underscore tag string to, maybe it'll include the path to that nested value as the string value.
Okay. How the frick do you do that?
Conditional breakpoint.
No. Like, are you just taking the JSON, like, so let's say it does, you know, fetch dot then, right? And then it does dot JSON and then it does another callback and it uses the value.
Yep.
So right there when it's using the value, you just, like, are you modifying the prototype for that specific? You just inserting into the objects recursively?
Yes, I'm literally just adding string. I'm just adding, and this is not a great
way
that's
to fine.
Do this.
This is sloppy.
I haven't ever had it work out either. It's gonna though one day. And so I have that set there. So that object is tagged up.
Yeah.
And then I have a conditional breakpoint on the React create element function. So whatever minified webpack vendor code that ends up in, it's easy to find because everybody's calling it.
Yeah.
So just set a breakpoint somewhere that calls it, just get a reference to it. It's the same one being called by everything.
Sure.
Look at the second argument and see if it has that XSS tag set on it. And so if it does, then that means some value from that JSON response allows me to add arbitrary properties that reach the props call. And so in cases where that's happening with like a childless component, you can slip the dangerously set inner HTML into that.
Okay.
And so,
let me repeat this back to you, make sure I got it. So we do the CSPT, we establish JSON control for every object recursively inside of that JSON.
Yeah. And so
you add the underscore XSS or whatever, and then you do that via conditional breakpoint.
Yep.
And then you set a breakpoint at React create element.
Yep.
And you check the props that are being passed in and you do another conditional breakpoint
to see if they're tainted.
To say, hey, if this has underscore XSS, then I have arbitrary prop control.
Yes, in theory.
Okay.
And it's not great because like there's all kinds of things. If we had real taint tracking, wow, that'd be so great. But there's so many things that can break the tracking, and it might be the case with this. I'm just using like a stock intended value. Mm-hmm. There might be weird stuff that's supported on that though.
Yeah.
That I miss with that. So there's many gaps there.
They might be grabbing something, cloning it, you know, like.
And then sometimes it breaks intended functionality because there's stuff that like cares about every key that's on there, and I just can't use this. And it's a sloppy, lazy way to check, but it's fast.
The whole concept behind it is good, which is that we need to try to figure out if JSON that's coming back is being arbitrarily mapped into attributes in a React create element. And so assuming it is, let's just say we find one of those. Is it just as simple as adding like an on load event?
No, you can't do that.
Or, you know, how does this work, right?
So you can, if it is child, the cheat sheet and whatever.
Dude, okay, no, we can put
if
it on the
if it's childless.
Hold on. Let me pull it up.
If it's childless, you can use props dot dangerously set enter HTML dot underscore underscore HTML.
Okay.
Regardless,
there it is right there. I don't know.
I don't actually know. Yeah, I'm not sure. That might not work with certain types. I don't actually really know. And it might vary. I like the under construction GIF. That was a nice touch on my part.
All right, let's.
So we've got some interesting scenarios here. So if we control type and props, that's a really good day for us.
Okay. I see what this maps to. This is a mapping of what you control to what you can achieve with it.
Yep.
Okay.
So types and props. That's just and everything here assumes number one, deserialized JSON being passed into the function, and number two, we're not worried about CSPs.
Okay.
So we're saying types plus props equals XSS. So iframe with a source doc.
Yeah.
Have fun. You can just type iframe props dot source doc, type plus children. So this one's actually interesting because I actually see a lot of, a lot of the times when you see dangerously set enter HTML syncs in code bases, it's used for styles. It's like, oh, okay. You don't need to. If you pass a string child, I don't understand. They don't need to, maybe on older versions they needed to, but if you have type style children, some text nodes,
It works. Fine.
I tested it it works because it's like, I thought it wouldn't, but then I tested it because I wrote this. I'm like, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. Why do I see that everywhere? And it's like, whatever. So, you know, style, inline style injection, that's pretty nice. Maybe we'll talk about that today.
Yeah. No, that's pretty solid. Okay. I see how these are mapping out.
Yeah.
Okay. So we need to establish. So all of these, or most of these really are assuming you control the type of the object that's being created though.
Well,
like iframe or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, that's like really a nice scenario. But if you don't support the type or don't control the type and there's no children present, and I think it'll work on function type components, but I kind of want to double check that now. You can set props dangerously set enter HTML underscore underscore HTML. There may be more.
So if you have arbitrary props control, you can also do that.
Yes, but there with an asterisk. So number one, no children present, otherwise it'll throw an error.
Okay.
So it, you know, because that makes sense. Because it's like, what's the child of the element going to be? Is it going to be the children you provided, or the and it deserves to complain about that.
Yeah.
And then I'm not sure how that fares with. I'm sure there's more asterisks. You could look at the React code.
But I mean, it's very solid research, you know, off the bat. And I love these graphics that Richard. If it's not on the screen already, please put the cheat sheet up. But I love these cheat sheets where we can say, okay, here's the primitive. So let me just condense it for the listener. Okay. The listener, the takeaway from this is that we need to try to identify scenarios where JSON or some sort of serialized version of HTML is being dumped into React create element in some capacity. And then there's various things that it could be being dumped into it with. It could be controlling the type, or it could be controlling the props that are going into that specific type. And what this mapping here shows is, okay, if you control type and prop, then you can do this. If you control type and children, you can do this. And then, you know, maybe you only control specific set of props, then you can do this. You know, and you've done the research, you've done the legwork for us to understand what's possible in those. And there's probably additional research.
Yeah, there's so much missing here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And some of this might not be, there might be more asterisks that belong here. And then I couldn't find a citation on the type plus children mixed case script filtering, which I tried too hard. Like I gave up.
Oh, like
I read a write up about this like a year and a half ago, but I can't find anything on it.
Oh, dude.
And I was like looking, you know, like full like Gemini deep research, and it's like, but I didn't hallucinate it. it's real. I'm not crazy. So maybe someone can help find that citation. And it sucks because I like, instead of going for the React versions here, I just like did a rough estimate.
Old React, roughly. Yeah,
and it sucks because it's like, I really probably should have gone for the version. But I had to get the talk put together. And
yeah, no, it's all good, man. And, you know, and that's why that's one of the beautiful things about doing Critical Thinking Podcasts is you can come on afterwards, talk about the nuances of it, you know.
Try to make it someone else's problem.
Make it somebody else's problem. Exactly. Hand off some research. So we just got done with the episode with James Kettle. You know, one of the things that he is really great with is, you know, trying to give the community additional research topics to dive deep on. And the listeners just got done hearing about how they should do that. So give us the version of that for this. Like, what kind of things would you like to see people go down the rabbit hole on for this?
So the changes that have occurred between React 16, and like React 19, for how this sync gets reached might be interesting.
Yeah.
Cause there are changes. It's very different. I don't know what's going on now.
Okay.
Most of my research on this was like on like a, I think like 2018 version of React, cause that's just what the app was still using.
Sure.
Exploring that, I like, so the last item there is really interesting, where if you controlled the children on older versions, so nowadays it uses like a symbol to tell if it's a React element or not, if an object's a React element. Before it would just use like underscore is React component colon true or something.
Yeah.
And so there's a great write-up you can find that is, you can find a citation on that one. That one is real.
Dude, I've been screwed by that symbol thing so many times. So I was like,
well, it's good. It's a good, yeah, it's a good mitigation.
So annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like a lot of times I know when what I was trying to exploit was some post message based stuff. And I was like, dude, I can completely recreate this object except for the symbol.
Yeah.
And it's like,
just like find, what was this with JSON or was it with structured
clone? It was with JSON. Yeah.
If it was structured clone, you should just find like a 0 day that allows you to get symbols through structured clone. That'd be funny.
Like, dude, that would be crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So further research here. Yeah. Actually sitting down and becoming more intimately familiar with the life cycle of how components get created in React. So what happens after you reach that create element call and what the nuances of that are beyond, wow, it made an element in the DOM with the type and attributes, or it ran the render function.
That's kind of my understanding.
Right.
So
and
far.
So I think getting deeper into that would be nice. Interesting nuances.
I love
there.
It when you use the dumb voice and the quotes and then say exactly what's going through my head. Oh my gosh.
Well, I don't know what's going on there. So no, I mean, I'm not any better than that.
So,
but
yeah.
You know, you got to be deliberate about what you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to be real about it. All right, man. Well, good shit. I really did not have this on my radar. You know, a lot of times when I'm thinking about these sort of things, I'm just kind of using my CSPTs to like spray for like, you know, any sort of actual, you know, real injection. And then if it's, if I get an H1 tag through, I'm like, all right, come on.
That'd be a party.
Is it React or is it? Or is it like, you know, oh no, it's React sanitized, I'm screwed, you know. But I guess let's talk a little bit about CSPTs, because you also share my passion for CSPTs.
They're cool.
And one of the things that, I mean, there's been a lot of good research on it with resulting in CSERF and stuff like that. But one of the apps that I've hacked on recently has had a really interesting variety of CSPTs where there is a CSPT that will occur when you are crafting when you first go to the page. So it's doing a get, it's fetching the object, that sort of thing. And then there's another CSPT that will occur after they interact with the page.
I like that. Yeah, I was looking and thinking about one of those where the get isn't very meaningful, but if we could get a put or a delete on the same endpoint when you click a button on the page.
Yeah. So I guess one of the... that's the really cool thing about those, right? Is like you can prime the page and then the user's like, what the heck is going on with this? Like,
you know. Do you want to chain that then with like a double click jack?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. You could do that. Yeah. You definitely could do that.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not.
But I mean, it's most of the time it's doing a fetch, so you're not going to get it. I guess you could do a pop under and get it to preload, you know, because
I don't understand your scenario. Do they have to perform some user interaction to get it to make those?
To the put. So, the first scenario is you load up the page, it loads an object, right, on the page. Then you press save and it modifies that object.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Exactly. Yep.
So the way that I'm thinking about it right now is that there's only, I'm pretty sure this is not exploitable, but I want to get your thoughts on this. As if there are not differences in sources and syncs between the get and the you know, state changing request, then I think you're screwed. Because, you know, if I wanted to, let's say I've got the CSPT, I've established it, I have full control of the path. I hit an OR, I get it back to my server, I give it the JSON format that it's looking for, I create a fabricated object that's like glitched or whatever, and the person says, oh, I need to delete this object, okay? Mm-hmm. So they press delete on that. That generates a delete request that also has my CSPT in the, you know, in the path, right? But it, I guess,
But if it hits
OR,
your server, what are you going to, are you going to redirect it to another? Yeah. Yep. But I don't know though if that's going to maintain authentication. It depends how they're doing off. If it's they're passing it via like an authorization header, then that's going to get stripped.
It's going to get stripped.
But if they're doing it with cookies... But
if you 307, would it...
With cookies? I don't know, man. I should know that.
Dude, we should know that.
Yeah, come on. Man, what are we doing here? What
are we doing on this podcast, right? We need to know these things.
Yeah, let me
think.
But
that's a great point. Because I was thinking like, oh, I'm screwed. Because in the situation that I'm hacking on, I don't have an open redirect.
Right.
But, you know, and I was just going to do it via like a JSON upload sync. But
could you modify those in real time in between? So like as a low priv user, you like,
but it's not, it needs
to be
to,
interesting.
The delete needs to be, you know, pointed at, you know,
can you modify the resource though? So like between the time that they've loaded the page, it's made the get it, the resource is in one state.
Yeah, you almost do like a race condition.
Right, that's but then where is it going to go to? That's a good point. It's going to hit the same stupid endpoint that doesn't do anything.
My favorite ones, though, are when you can get it to load up, and then it actually takes an ID from what you returned back, and then puts that in the modified.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. And then you can,
that's really nice.
Then you can get like a delete or a post, and then you get control over that. You know what I'm saying?
It's like having an additional traversal for another request built into the first. That's nice. I wish I had that. Yeah, so you should just get an OR on that app.
That's my takeaway. And then, you know, maybe use the 307s to actually
see if that works.
Yeah, we'll have to see.
Man, I should know that. I don't know. I think it might be a problem.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's we'll think on that one a little bit more. Do you have any other before we transition away from this, do you have any other like thoughts on CSPT that you've been exploring lately? Because I know that you and I have kind of bonded over those in the past.
I think that I don't exploit enough CSPT because I'm missing the gadgets to actually do anything with it.
Yeah.
Like I have so much more CSPT than I have exploited CSPTs because it's like, whether it's, oh man, there's nothing fun going on here with what it's actually doing with the content, or it's, there's no open redirects on this site until XSS Doctor.
I've been
Bus Factor pop
those
it
bastards,
and it's like,
dude, I honestly, that made me so mad.
I mean, that write up was amazing. Okay, so the thing with like bug bounty it's an amazing CSPT. The thing with bug bounty you don't get with CTFs is when the CTF is over and you've spent all your time beating your head against a problem and you haven't solved it, somebody's gonna publish a write up and you get to learn something with it.
Yeah,
with bug bounty, You just move
pull
on.
Your hair out.
Right.
You think about it two years later.
Right, exactly. And so to have a situation where it's like, wow, I was looking at this the month before and so close.
There were
really good pieces of that chain that I don't think I would have done. The way that they did the self dance was amazing. So even if I had like the redirect true, but for a different endpoint but the fact that you get to see the solution at the end, it's like, you don't get that with bug bounty. And that it was such a great write-up that explained everything so well, and the bugs. And these guys are brilliant.
They really are. Yeah, that was a beautiful piece. I think one of the interesting things that I've seen with CSPT lately that I'll just tell you about is I found a endpoint where I could upload an arbitrary file, you know, that would be great for CSPT. I'm like, woohoo, this is going to be great. But it's actually with its application JSON content type, but the whole like file was just being returned as one JSON string. So like it was the first character of the response was a double quote, and then everything was quoted inside of it. Yeah. And then there was a double quote at the end.
So what content type was it?
And it was application JSON, you know, which is
okay. Weird. I guess that is valid.
But you know what ended up happening, dude? I was like, when I was so gutted when I saw it.
Yeah.
But what ended up happening was, it was actually there was a recursive check that was saying like, hey, if we can parse this as JSON, then parse it as JSON. So it actually ended up working anyway.
Nice, I love that. Yeah.
But those upload gadgets, you know, I think they're definitely useful. They're definitely rare. But there might be more of them than I'm giving it credit for, you know?
Yeah. It's definitely like, if you're going to be doing CSPT, you've got to be good at then finding those additional gadgets that you need, whether it be an upload or an OR or something crazy.
Yeah, that's what the doctor does, man. Like, you know, the guys like the doctor and I was talking about last week, Tom Anthony, like just really putting in the freaking.
Oh man, that bug was crazy though.
Yeah.
That chain.
Yeah, that was beautiful. Actually, we did get permission to share a little bit more detail now on that. We mentioned it a little bit last week, but the way that it worked was I'm sorry, Nick, I'm just going to yap about this now. Yeah, I know you were in that chat too, but there was a window location.replace that Tom controlled. And then there was a window location.replace that Tom didn't control. And they were right next to each other, right after each other. So the second one was just overwriting Tom's exploit every single time. And what ended up actually, the way that they ended up exploiting it was there is a same site limit on how many times you can do window location.replace. It's like 200. So you find a same site or same, same site it was, not same origin. It was same site. You find a same site location.replace that you can trigger via on hash change or something like that. And then you churn that 199 times and then you redirect to your, same site spot where you control the location.replace. It hits yours. That's the 200th. And then the 201st that would overwrite yours is over the limit, so it doesn't trigger it. And then you get XSS via JavaScript URL.
What I liked about that scenario was when you look at it, intuitively, you're like, what do you mean it's not executing the JavaScript? This looks like this should do this. But it's like, no. Apparently, however it decides to perform that replace. My whole thing was go read the browser source. Yeah. Stop trying to do this black box.
Yeah.
It's all white box. You can sit down and figure it out. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And I still don't know what's going on.
It was crazy.
But
it was very weird because you'd think if you did location, window location.replace JavaScript URI alert, and then window location.replace, whatever site.com, then you'd get the alert first.
Yeah, but now
it overrides it.
And I think that's why it was so cool, because it's like you look at it and you're like intuitively like, this should work. And it's like, oh, actually it doesn't. Here's a really strange browser quirk.
Crazy, crazy.
And then abusing an even crazier, man, yeah, that's
freaking crazy journey. All right, man. So let's go ahead and talk a little bit about CSS injection stuff. And I have also been on this crazy journey of what can we do with a CSS injection. I guess, tell me a little bit about your journey. Do you have that bug in your head?
About that in abstract terms.
Yeah.
I don't remember the exact CSP requirements.
Yeah.
But essentially I had some scenario where some HTML is stored and reflected client side. It's supposed to be sanitized. They did like custom DOM purify sanitization for styles where.
Oh, wow. Dang. That's kind of a crazy config.
No, it wasn't. It just tries to wrap it in like a selector.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
But you can just close the selector and be like, I'm not doing that today. So it was like, cool. And
I'm surprised that they used DOM purify for that though.
Well, because they also didn't want HTML in it. So it was like, bad HTML in it. Like they wanted some, it was for a scenario where you wanted some HTML.
But not
bad HTML. And you wanted the styles to not affect the whole page. Mm. So they wrapped it in a selector and it wasn't really a security concern, I guess. When the developer wrote it, they were probably like, we want to be able to show these styles in the context of the content. Mm. And so we'll just wrap it this way. And that's why but we want people to be able to write style tags and then have them only apply to the selected, you can just close it. CSP was a little bit tight. Could not do sequential import chaining the fact that you were either self for styles or you were unsafe inline. Mm-hmm. We were unsafe inline here. Limited character set, or not character, length. I think it was like,
oh my gosh,
5,000 characters.
Okay, so still pretty liberal, but not enough.
Yeah. But the big thing it supported was data font URI. And that made it exploitable with the static version of FontLeak. Mm. And so FontLeak is, I think it came out like a couple months before I was working on this. So I found the perfect time to be trying to do this exact scenario. So it's made by Adragos. I don't know how that's pronounced. Romanian CTF player. Mm. He has a great write-up on it. You should definitely link it in the doc FontLeak. For this.
Yeah. I think we've mentioned it once or twice on the pod before.
It's nuts. Really good. And so, one of the things he built for it was static mode. Mm. And
I have not used this. This is interesting.
Yes. And so with static mode, instead of doing sequential import chaining, it takes advantage of certain behaviors that you can use to cause using CSS animations to
keyframes.
Yes, to resize an element and then trigger a new background load based on the widths.
Mm-hmm.
It's really big.
Yeah,
it's not 5 megabytes. Oh, and I was trying to leak like there's a style or a script tag in the header I wanted to leak because it had a token.
Mm.
Dude, it's like a big token too. It's like 1,400 characters.
Oh no way! Yeah. A massive token.
Yes.
Oh shit.
And so I've got to leak a token that big with such a small payload. So
is this like a HTML injection? Like it's not via like post message or anything.
HTML
like that?
Stored on the page, no post message.
Oh,
yep. And so it's like you have one shot. Now, if I had a CSS, or if I could load CSS on Origin,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I had a way to do it, but it was PRH, mm-hmm. Like stupidly PRH.
What is PRH?
Permissions required high.
Oh, okay.
I didn't want that. I don't know. I could have fallen back on that in theory if I really needed to.
Yeah.
I wanted to fit it all within the 5,000 character payload. So I just generate like a naive one pointed at my domain / font leak, you know,
mm-hmm.
It's like 25 megabytes.
Oh my gosh.
So dude. I had, well, number one,
jeez.
I had to make so many changes and I wanted to do a blog post on this and I was gonna, but I've been busy.
Yeah. Do it, man.
Yeah, but I've been busy. I've been on fire on some applications.
So I have you really?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, dude. That's the best.
Yeah.
Well, the episode that came out last week, I don't know if you've,
No, cause the QA for it didn't come out. I was hoping the QA would drop today. I could listen to it before I came on and have thoughts about it.
Yeah.
That'd be funny.
Guys, there's like some of you guys in the Critical Thinkers know this, but like there's a QA team for critical thinking where we have people, we get them early access to the episode so that they can review. And Nick has been a very, very loyal QA guy and has found lots of issues and provided really valuable
feedback.
I
like listening to the episode, really.
It's
great,
man. It's freaking great. But yeah, that episode that we talked, we're actually launching the CTBB, research.
Yeah, I wanted the details on that because I'm always telling you guys that, man, you guys got to drop something.
Yeah,
man.
Well, we did the initial post and... Yeah, and so it is actually technically live right now, so you can go read it. But we're also going to open up the lab a little bit to the community and just try to give the community incentive to just write up shit because it is hard to write shit up, you know. And so we'll have a couple $100 that we allocate to the lab each month where we can say, hey, you know, you did your write up, you know, we're going to host it, we're going to give you additional distribution, that sort of thing. Here's a couple $100. So at least I can buy you dinner, you know, that sort of thing. So man, who knows? Maybe.
No, I have a couple.
Maybe drop it on there, man.
But one of them is like pending CVE, whatever.
Yeah. What's the solution to this?
So this right here. Yeah. Oh man, I had to make. So number one, Font Leak claims to support arbitrary parents of the. So you provide a selector for what you want to exfil from, and it just exfils the content. It's supposed to support exfilling from head. It doesn't actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it doesn't actually do it. So I had to change it and there was some nuances.
But it is possible.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's just like you had to like know what pieces of it to invert. So I just spent a while playing with it, trying to figure, talking to poor Adragos and just bothering him.
This is like, hey,
having
man.
All these stupid questions that were like, man, this guy doesn't actually understand what's going on here.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
Because I can tell I'm asking him stupid and I feel bad for it, but I figured it out in the end enough.
Yeah.
To get it at all working. And so getting it exfilling from a child of the head was one piece. Using
it all by keyframe animations in a sub 5,000 length payload.
Dude, yeah. And so I had to break out the 5-letter domain.
Did you really?
It's a banger because it's pious, but like elite.
No
way.
And
so that's a great domain.
That'd be
a good hacker handle.
That is great.
But.
Yeah.
Had to break out the short domain because it needs to exfil to each one of those to step to the next state or whatever. I should have brushed up on this better.
No, you're good. I know that like I also have exploited the same thing. We actually talked about it when you were exploiting it. And dude, it's so bloody complex that because you were like, oh, how did you solve this? I was like, look, dude, I know I had a solution to that. But
I have it in a private
Git
repo with my hacked version of Font Leak. And so I changed all of the endpoints.
Yeah.
So instead of like leaking on /leak, I think it leaked on like just like no slash. And I changed like just literally just top, just I had to cut every bit
every little byte
I could.
Yeah.
And so I changed like all the leak. I removed one of the params that's used for like tracking something that wasn't relevant. Mm. It's like, it was like stripping down a car. It's just like, imagine a Honda Civic with like no seats, no side panels.
You're just riding on the axle.
Yes. And you're just like, weight reduction. Oh, but like, yes. And so every query parameter that was required was cut down to one character. I could have taken some of that further actually by, I don't know. Oh, I don't want to speculate
on
it.
It's all good.
But that was one of the pieces. And then rewriting it. So it did just like, was it TTF? Is that the uncompressed version?
Yeah.
So it's a big font. It's a big custom font that gets generated by...
By FontLeak.
Yeah, by Ajax, because there's code. There's like, what's the compressed version? Is it OV?
WAF? What do you think?
No, WAF. Yeah. And so I had to rewrite it to auto-compress the font for me, because that saved space. It didn't save as much as I was hoping. And so I just had to keep sawing things off of this, rewriting things. And then I also added UI so that Triage could see what got leaked.
I'm sorry. I just realized what you said earlier.
Yeah.
This is done via a data URI in the font.
Yes.
My gosh. And so,
fortunately, there is no, the image source CSP for actually leaking everything via the background loads, that let HTTPS through. God. So that could hit my short domain, hit the font leak instance, hit all the, and so I barely got it all stripped down. It was not leaking the token reliably. I had to tune the rate at which the animation ran.
Yeah.
I got it to leak it perfectly if you just let it run for like 3 minutes without touching the mouse once. And I'm like, this is good enough.
Because
the problem is that there's a better method that Adragos had using that was, I couldn't figure it out, man. I was just like, and I'd already spent so much time on it, I'm like, screw it, I'm just going to submit this as is. If it gets through, I really think I proved this out.
The font stuff is nuts.
It
takes so much time, like, yeah, dynamically generating the fonts and like,
well, SVG. Fortunately, I mean, he did all the hard work. Just hacked
Thank
the hell
for
out
those,
of his
CTF guys, man.
Those guys are geniuses. Like,
yeah, dude. I think the keyframe piece is really good, and I think that as we continue to get more gadgets in CSS, this is going to get a lot more optimized.
Yes, that's very exciting, and I like when people in the CSS as a medium by which to express and create with people are like, browser devs, you should add things like nth letter selector. And it's you've got people that want to exfil over CSS that are like, nth letter selector.
I need this for my site.
And so I like when browser devs are encouraged to add fun features.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I kind of want to do, and maybe I'll put this on the research lab or whatever at some point, is like just create a list of things that would just solve everything, you know, in CSS. Like an nth letter selector would be just massive, you know, or like,
There's really like two classes of CSS hacking too. There's like the stuff where it's just like, yeah, I know this selector and it's like very straightforward. Then there's the stuff that it's like, I was able to get this element to change its size so this other element resized and that triggered, and it's like Minecraft redstone but CSS and it's being used to exfil stuff, and it's like, this is bonkers.
But I mean, I'm so glad that we do have the gadgets now to do it. Like a while, not being able to leak contents of inner HTML sucked, you know, and now we have that.
It's crazy. And it's only gonna get better.
And I can't believe that we can leak the contents of a script tag, you know? How the heck can we style that? Like, doesn't just,
and with those CSP requirements, I'm like, nah, there's no way. And I actually posted it in the hacking channel, and I was put on to FontLeak that way. So shout out the CTPB Discord. You should definitely join it,
guys.
There's a lot of great discussions. There's a lot of bugs
being
escalated, and you know, scenarios being discussed where it's like, is this exploitable? And then somebody comments, probably Jorian, like, here's how you actually,
dude. Oh my gosh, it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in the Full-Time Hunters Guild as well. I think that's been a really valuable part.
It's been amazing seeing how everybody's killing it, man.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah, everyone's, you know, they're kind of like, a lot of times people are updating, hey, this is my monthly, you know, this is how much I earned, this is how much I hacked, you know, here is where I am on my, you know, full-time bug bounty journey as far as like burnout and like trying to enjoy vacations and that sort of thing. And everyone can just kind of like commiserate together and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It is quite lovely.
Yeah, I've seen the victories. That's always thrilling. It's just amazing. I mean, it's just amazing how much like volume for victory. There isn't bug bounty. And it's like, there's no limit to the success you can have with bug bounty.
Yeah, dude. What insane. A beautiful industry.
It's awesome.
So when are you going full-time bug bounty, dude?
Well, I can't speculate on that because I'm on a podcast right now. maybe one day it's something I'll consider.
Really?
We'll put it that way. Nice. I don't know. Mm.
I think you'd crush it, dude. I think you'd crush it. But I mean, you're already crushing it, so it is what it is. Yeah.
I really like my day job.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we didn't even walk through my background.
Yeah.
We
okay. Let's swing back over to that real quick. We got distracted by a bunch of other stuff. Okay. I don't know about this format, man, that we do. You know, I think it's cool because it's like, all right, we get some of the meat up front with the bug stories and stuff like that. But like,
you've got the voice of your father in your head being like, who the hell is this guy? You got to introduce
exactly. him. Exactly. Introduce him. You know, what's going on? Okay, man. So yes. Give me a little bit of history about your hacking experience and I'll jump in wherever we cross over.
Okay. So my joke is that I've been heralded from birth. So the old roguelike NetHack, that's part of the starting text. As a child, I played NetHack and I always talked about making my own version. And so in order to do that, you have to like write C.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's the world we live in. So age 10 started writing awful Microsoft Small Basic because it's like easy IDE setup.
Yeah.
Like easy language. You're a dumb kid, figure it out, kid. And you know, you can't. 10-year-olds, you can't teach them C. That's like
not safe.
Yeah, like I mean, there was some like old like Google AI image like 3 years ago. Like there was a long time ago about like somebody asking for like C++ fundamentals, and the response was like, "These are an advanced topic, and given that you're under 18, I can't explain this." And it's like. Oh man. Yeah. I don't know how the AI got
it's got like
there.
The, you know, the blurred, text, like filter, like dangerous content.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? But yeah, so did that. I don't know. I'm glad that, I didn't get too deep into that and start getting into like Visual Basic or like .NET. Cause like,
that's how I started actually was Visual Basic and it was not fun.
Well, at least you went to Python after and got saved.
I did, dude.
Well, fortunately, instead of me building like WX Python apps or whatever, I was writing JavaScript, mostly HTML.
Damn, don't call me out like that. WX Python was my shit.
I did my research before I came on the pod. Dude.
What the heck? Yeah, I just got wrecked.
Yeah, dude.
That was like one of my first jobs. Was like, oh my gosh.
So self-taught, a lot of HTML, a little bit of JavaScript. By like 14, I got more proficient with it. Some web app hacking on a Rails app, maybe. I don't know. Mm. A lot of like, just like silly Chrome extensions. Yeah. Like, when you were slinging WX Python apps, I was writing like crappy Chrome extensions that were just like mostly content script.
Dude, I cannot believe you call me out like that. Damn. Okay. Solid. Yep.
So yeah. So
Chrome extensions, you know, you're doing some hacking stuff there.
Yeah. Games like HTML5 /JavaScript canvas.
Yeah. Games. Flash. I mentioned Flash.
So age 16. Yeah. I did a lot of like Flash game reverse engineering / hacking of highly obfuscated state of the art Flash games. Mm. A lot of fun. A lot of just like.
And were you like posting the shit on forums or like?
You know, a lot of it was like really cool visuals for like, you know, like building custom weapons in the games and stuff.
Oh, cool,
and like,
cool.
And then it was like, you know, you got to keep your ConHacks account alive by having like AOBs that like generated enough points to keep the account alive. I don't even know if that's still alive.
Dude, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay.
What are you talking about?
Just like. Game hacker stuff, you know what I mean? Okay. So like ConHacks was some like game cheat forum where you'd like post like cheat engine array a byte, or you know, maybe you write a whole trainer or whatever and share that, but that's kind of sketch. And so I don't know, it was just, there was some discussion that it was mostly trash, but it was like,
it's interesting you started in the game hacking world though. Are you like, is that something you're still interested in? Like, you know, there are a lot of really good game targets in Bug Bounty, but I don't think I've seen you go after them a ton. You did a little bit.
I don't want to discuss that in the context of this because it's kind of like, you know, you're talking about the whatever.
Yeah.
It's not really something I'm so focused on right now, especially because a lot of those are, if it's the kind of game that pays well, it's probably not the kind of game I'm interested in.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So it's not like I'm not going to.
More of like a hobby.
Right. Hobby I can't hack on Fortnite. I don't care about Fortnite.
Yeah.
Like it's, I try to hack on it and it's like, eh.
I don't care about
this. Yeah. Yeah. But gotcha. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. That was an interesting
time. That was your teen. So yeah, I mean, I guess at that time I would have been in college at VCU already.
It's really easy. If you take the age numbers, you just put a 20 at the start and that's the year.
Ah, dude, were you born in 2000?
But it saves me a lot of time on thinking.
Oh my god!
So instead of like knowing when anything was,
dude, I can't believe you were born in 2000.
Yeah, dude.
Dang.
Yeah,
that's
dude.
Nuts.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I would have been in college.
Yep.
While you were doing that.
Yep.
And I would have been writing WX Python, like you said, uh-huh. while you were uh-huh. doing that. So we after once you get into college,
yes.
you know. What's going on?
We're gonna go before college because okay. that was my real
sure. okay.
my real alma mater is the Chesterfield Technical Center.
It's is it really?
Yeah.
Dude.
So Cisco Networking Academy program.
Yeah.
Fantastic program. I mean, amazing. So I'm still involved as an alumni
yeah.
years later. We had ton of alumni involvement then.
That's awesome.
But like, I mean, they just gear you up and get you ready for all kinds of certifications.
Mm.
They get you hooked up with all kinds of like cybersecurity competitions.
Oh, really?
Cyber Patriot.
Cool. Yeah.
Also just running
Cyber
around
Patriot's
doing CTFs.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. Oh, man. Just having the team there and the energy, which is with the boys just ready to.
Dude,
oh, dude,
I did,
it's great.
I did CCDC
uh-huh.
Yeah, a little yeah, bit yeah. and that was really fun.
Yes.
But
yes, it was.
I can't imagine you yeah. know, doing that in high school. That would have been
yes,
great.
Yes, it was a hoot and a holler.
Yeah. That is one of the cons of being homeschooled is uh-huh. like I didn't, I've always thought about that, you know, technical center that uh-huh. a lot of my friends that were in public school were going to. And I was like, that would be pretty sick.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was an amazing yeah. program, still is. So yeah, started doing like local CTFs and like in-person stuff. Team Wombats.edu, shout out. got to get the plug. Huh? We haven't really competed in much. I guess we do RVASEC monthly or not annually. Yeah. But yeah. So, you know, geared up doing like Cisco networking as well as like CompTIA A+, Sec Plus. Well, the Sec Plus was additional.
What are your thoughts on those certs?
Very like, well, they've changed a lot since then.
Yeah.
But very good if you're
yeah.
trying to get your foot in the door. I mean,
exactly.
especially in the state of the industry now. Like
That's kind of what I tell to people, like, you know, if you're actually going to be, if you're trying to get a job in the industry, you know, if you're trying to get your foot in the door, those, or just catch up if you're not in a security program.
Here's how I'll
know?
Sell it. Those yeah. afforded me the ability to start at VCU and also start a part-time job working for I was supposed to be doing IT, but then I ended up doing software development because that's just how it, you know, when you can write code, they make you write code.
Yeah.
For the school. So like, you know, I'm doing that while like my buddy's like working for Jimmy John's.
Exactly,
just busting his ass on a bike
it's
and
great.
Like dealing with just the city traffic and almost dying.
Yeah.
And, like, oh yeah, I'm in the basement writing code. It's cool.
Dude, it's
so great. that afforded me those opportunities. Then yeah, so did all kinds of things in that program. It was amazing. Like it was 2 years, but it felt like so much longer.
Yeah.
We hosted actually built a CTF event for a local nonprofit, which was awesome. We were in that for a few years until COVID.
Dang, dude.
I would have met Tommy DeVos when I was in high school. So I would have been at like an RVASEC monthly happy hours.
Yeah.
Somewhere maybe in the West End or something.
Yeah, Rich Tech or whatever.
And he just showed up one day and just started saying all these things. And it's like, at first you're like, wait a minute, is any of this real? This guy seems a little crazy. And
yeah.
it's like, oh, it's all like relatively real. That's
yeah.
insane.
Yeah, dude. I it's so funny that that's a part of your story as well, because there's so many top hackers that have somehow just had like a brush passing
uh-huh.
with Tommy DeVos,
yes,
right?
Yeah,
like,
yes.
like I so me, ZLZ also.
You got to get him on the pod.
CDL, you know, like you, like, dude, it's crazy. He just, and it's not always a lot of involvement,
right?
You know, like,
yeah.
like I've hit Tommy up from time to time and
uh-huh.
stuff like that, but we haven't hacked together
yeah.
very much. It's just that one day that he came into the cybersecurity club and was like, dude, bug bounty is real and here it is.
Uh-huh.
And that was, I was done. I was cooked.
Yeah,
dude.
No, he put Ali on.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Ali was all over it too. What a legend, man.
Yep.
What a freaking legend.
Yep. And then I don't know, eventually I graduated high school. I missed my high school graduation though to go to RVASEC conference. That was awesome.
Classic.
I can't, maybe there were some other pieces I wanted to hit there. I don't know. It was cool.
Yeah.
And then yeah, going to VCU. So I think part of the reason I went to VCU, well, number one, they had a great offer for me.
Yeah.
And then number two, it's local. And then number three, I met Erwin in the Cisco Networking Academy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. And so, cause he came back as an alumni.
And, he was super big into the Cisco stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. He still is.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
So he was able to get me into the cyber club, just walked onto the CCDC team because he knew I was good.
Yeah.
And it's not like we
weren't super stacked.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Well, it was like some schools have like an A team and then an entire B backup team. And we were not that. But yeah, so that was cool going to VCU, working for VCU, doing. I think my job title at one point was senior software development technician.
Really? Wait, so you're working with VCU?
Yeah, so I was working for Labs and Classroom Computing in the basement of the library, hitting buttons. The manager was actually like an alumni of the Tech Center program, maybe like 10 years before me.
That's awesome.
And they hired a lot of Tech Center kids because they knew that they could like do the work and were like, had the certs or whatever. Yeah. And so that was all a great opportunity.
Did you ever cross paths with Zephyr? Yeah, dude,
I love Zephyr.
Freaking Zephyr, man. I love that guy. What a fun time. Yeah, the cybersecurity club, man, I definitely couldn't have done that without Zephyr, because we started it up and then some guy from the Linux department gifted us like this server rack, and we just hauled it over the east and just like shoved it in a corner, and then Zephyr's like, leave this to me.
No, and it was sad though, because like, man, there was kind of a battle where people wanted to move off of Proxmox onto ESXi. And I'm like, come on, man.
No.
And so fortunately Zephyr helped hold it down.
There we go.
Yeah. I don't know what ended up happening to all that, but I think they redid that room and moved the rack after COVID everything.
I went back there not too long ago and it was gone and I was so sad.
Yeah, well, the cyber club is.
Is it really?
I don't know what happened.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so essentially what happened was, I don't know. I passed it off to someone after I graduated. And I think he was about to graduate though after that. And then after that, I don't know what happened.
Dude,
somebody picked it back up. No, it's not. I've talked to Erwin about this. We're going to make sure. We're going to do a little bit of a coup. So what happened was there was kind of a schism where the whatever club was going on was ineffective. They weren't meeting. I don't know. So another club formed and Fung left.
Really?
Yes. And so the club got taken over by someone. I don't know. Whatever. So a second club formed called the Cyber Competitions Club. And so the main club ended up dying. And I think the Cyber Competitions. So what needs to happen is somebody needs to go to the Cyber Competitions Club and tell them, hey, guys, you're the Cybersecurity Club now. It's back alive. The chain. That's what I think. And so. Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of what we did anyway. You know, we did the competitions, and the way that I structured it in the beginning was just we met weekly. You know, somebody from the club would talk about, you know, some vulnerability, whether it be a web or like some Metasploitable solution or something, and that's how we would do it. Yeah. So
it was nice in person. When I took it over after COVID, man, people did not want to sit in one more Zoom call.
Yeah,
like then it was hard to get, like, sometimes we could get content, and we had people that were really carrying the club, you know, good club members that would do stuff but sometimes it's just like, I need to have a meeting. I'm just going to ramble for an hour about whatever I'm working on.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
It's like,
dude, that's what I do every week on the podcast. Yeah,
that's a good point. You seem to have mastered
that.
I've done that in college
and also in my professional life. Speaking of which, we should probably move along from our VCU catch up thing.
Yeah, I don't know if that's good radio. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, dude. Look, we've run for a little bit here. Let me see if there's anything else on this list that I really wanted to get you to. Let's do one more topic here. Do any of these really stand out to you? This story about your worst crit sounds pretty freaking good. Let's wrap it up.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, my first crit, awful, hard-fought browser exploitation, figuring all that stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
My worst crit was, I'm looking at an app, looking at the checkout page, because it's on like some separate origin. Mm-hmm. You know,
Is it like PCI isolated, or is it like, you know, like...
No, I'm like...
Or is the checkout page...
It's like some subdomain.
You know,
it's
how like
checkout,
the field is like...
Yeah, where they'll like do some cursed iframe stuff where it's like technically it's... Yeah.
Yeah.
No, this was its whole own Next.js app.
Okay, sure.
And so I'm looking at it, And I glance at the source and I'm like, oh, nice. My token's reflected in this. I'll take that down as a note in case I need a token leak later. And I'm like, actually, let me, and it's a JSON web token. So I'm like, actually, let me grab my token from this and see what fields are in it. Cause it's like,
yeah,
let's see if I can inject into any of this based on like account creation details. That'd be cool. But like, let's just see what's even in here. So decode the token. I'm like, wait, that's not my email address. That's not.
No, yes. No.
Yeah.
No.
Yes. And so I'm like, what is going on? Refresh the page, grab the token again. Wait, that's someone, that's a whole net. And so what happened was, they did have my token in there. But they also had someone. So somewhere in the next data, that got returned for that page to render it, they cached stuff wrong, I guess. And so one of the sub objects would have some cached value that would include some random other user's auth token.
No.
And so I was able to like grab one of those, hit like the slash whatever slash me endpoint, yeah, validate that those were actually valid other people's tokens. And
wow,
it's reported that they fixed it pretty quickly. But
depending on the cache lifetime too, that would have been.
Oh, it was nuts. I refresh and I get a new token every time. And I don't like, so I don't know what the, how they messed that one up, but it had to be caching related with the Next.js rendering, something horribly cursed going on the back end. I think they used a lot of Kubernetes. I don't know what they were doing. I don't know.
Caching stuff is crazy, man. It really is. And so it is all over the place.
That was like such a free crit for like, and it's like, that's something that you're not going to pick up with like most automation either. Cause you're not, you're not expecting to be served two JSON web tokens in some JSON blob on the page.
Well, now I'm going to feel like every time I see a JSON web token, I have to like compulsively just double check that it is mine, you know, like instead of somebody else's.
One of the interesting ideas I had in the doc, well, so some API security platforms that are also that integrate with like API proxies. So I don't know. Let's just say Akamai.
Sure. Okay. All right.
Let's just say Akamai and let's say No Name Security, their acquisition.
Yeah.
They support, like an API security functionality that allows for, you to, their system processes all of the web requests. And then it, based on requests that happened, you can actually try to pick up vulnerabilities in your code.
Mm.
Well, things that would be caused by your code or some configuration where it's like, this is supposed to be authenticated based on the patterns we've seen, but it's not. Mm. I think something like that, but for Kaido history, would be really cool. Mm. So something where you retroactively scan all of your requests with certain rules that look for things. So something like, is some really weird email in a JSON web token could be something you retroactively scan all your.
For sure. And I just wrote down in my notes, like, cause I was hacking right before this episode. And I was like, you know what I want to do right now? I have this active workflow in Kaido and I want to just run it on everything that I've done so far, you know? And we're definitely going to make that happen at some point because like, and then it just plop everything into findings and you're good to go. So I think that is definitely going to be something that happens. It's like passive workflow, but like retroactive.
Right. Yeah.
All right, man. Well, hey, thanks so much for coming on the pod.
Yep.
It's been a long time coming. Thanks for... Dude, it's just crazy that because I messaged you, I was like, hey man, you on your way over? And you're like, I'm about to leave. And then like 2 minutes later, you're at my house. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? So it's great to have you around so close. And I'm definitely going to hit you up whenever I've got some hacking problems. I'm just going to be like, hey man, just zip over
real quick. And
we'll shell some shit together.
Sounds good.
All right, man.
Cool, man. All right, good pod.
That's the pod. And that's a wrap on this episode of Critical Thinking. Thanks so much for watching to the end, y'all. If you want more Critical Thinking content, or if you want to support the show, head over to ctbb.show/discord. You can hop in the community. There's lots of great high-level hacking discussion happening there, on top of masterclasses, hackalongs, exclusive content, and a full-time hunter's guild if you're a full-time hunter. It's a great time. Trust me. All right, I'll see you there.